That was the end of that. So I started talking to other people about my experience, and I ran into a guy that was part of a group called Understanding. It was originated by a person called Daniel Fry out of California. And they would meet weekly and brainstorm and work together trying to understand where we are in our technology, where we are in our psychology and everything else. And I was talking to this guy, and he said, "Well, you sound like a bunch of people that I meet with. Come on over and talk." I said, "Okay." So I went over there, and I started talking about levitating bees, and my dream in life is to get floating homes, that everybody has their own home that is
off the ground.
Off the ground. Mm-hmm. It's run by magnetic power, which is so simple that they've overlooked it or they've concealed it. One of the two, because it's absolutely, utterly the simplest thing in the world is levitation. But they, for some reason, aren't using it. Well, I found out later, and along with the backslash I got from Dr. Weinhardt, that they really don't want any technology that doesn't make money. So they said, "Well, we got another guy that's along in the same, on the same page as you. His name is Otis T. Carr. He's in Oklahoma. He's in Norman, Oklahoma, right now, and he's having some problems because they don't want him to go any further. He was starting to demonstrate his crafts. He's building small circular foil craft, and he's in trouble. We're going to bring him out here to meet you, and then we're going to find a place for you guys to go ahead and develop this out here. We want to get this technology out." So they did. They invited him out. He brought his entourage with him. He had about eight engineers and public relations. Wayne Aho was with him, Dennis Ripoldi, a lot of people that were in those days known. They aren't known now. They all came out, and they put us up at Lake Arrowhead in one of the cabins that one of the people had in the group, and said, "Just hang out here for a while till we get you a place to work." Well, that's where we were, and we brainstormed night and day up there, and I got into some discussions with Mr. Carr that were phenomenal. They were just absolutely...
Otis later became your partner, right?
Yeah.
And he's passed away.
Yeah, he passed away.
Yeah. Okay, so you're up in this cabin all the time, brainstorming, and you got a relationship built up with him and the others.
Right, and we talked about natural law. Uh-huh. Everything that he had learned. He was a protege of Nikola Tesla. He worked with Tesla for 3 years. In Baltimore, Maryland, and Tesla had tried consistently after working for Westinghouse and Edison companies to convince J.P. Morgan, who was the backer at that time, the funder at that time, that you don't need any wires to transmit electricity. We're living in a sea of electricity, and you don't need all these wires and telephone poles. And J.P. Morgan said, "Now, wait a minute, Tesla. You're interrupting the copper industry. You're interrupting the lumber industry. And what are you talking about?" Well, he said, it's kind of like a free energy, because you can put a pole on the ground 30 feet and up in the air 30 feet, and you can draw in enough electricity to run your whole household forever without any pollution, without any noise, and most of all, no meters." Well, J.P. Morgan didn't want to hear that. He said, no, this is a monetary system, and there's no money in it, and we're not going to do that, Tesla." So, and he had built one very functional laboratory in Colorado Springs, where he had already demonstrated this wireless transmission of electricity. He could light lights mile, 2 miles away and light them up, and no noise, no pollution, etc. But
about what year was this? I wonder.
Oh God, I don't remember.
Probably.
I don't remember.
It could be in the 30s or 40s.
I think it was earlier than that. Well, maybe the 30s, I think.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, anyway.
The point was, we've had this for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of broke Tesla's heart because all he wanted to do was help mankind have a better life.
Right.
And when he met Carr immediately, they came together as good friends, and Carr was a sponge. He loved science, and he got close to Tesla, and Tesla taught him everything he knew about natural law and told Carr, I'm not going to be able to make it in my lifetime. People like Morgan are out there that don't want this to happen, so you take it in your lifetime and go with it and run with the ball and see if you can make a touchdown. And if you can't, pass it on. And if they can't, pass it on. But this has to be someday, because they're going to run into more trouble than they realize. They're chasing their tails, and they're going to destroy themselves. They're on a destructive course.
Well, you're certainly probably right on that. We're getting closer, aren't we?
Yeah, we're getting very close now.
Well,
the bees are leaving California.
Yeah. So it's not long.
No. So anyway, it was passed on to Carr, and Carr went ahead and developed the technology to build spaceships. And when he was had trouble in Norman, Oklahoma, with bad press and everything, they said, let's get him out here because they're going to shut him down. And he had many, many threats against his life and everything. So we got a call up at Lake Arrowhead.
Well, I can certainly understand that since I'm a native of Oklahoma. But you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So they gave us a call and said, we got you coincidentally, there's a giant laboratory facility complete with warehouses, workshop, machine shop, offices, and everything necessary for you guys to go to work. And we're given a carte blanche on it. They for some reason they built this for a company that declined to take it, and so we want to see this thing develop, so it's yours. So anyway, we started developing craft, and to make things a little shorter here, we developed small bench models that we were operating natural principles with, and one of which I was involved with. We had a bench model, and we had it attached to an audio amplifier similar to that I had. It's a little more fancy than the one I had, but the one I had on the 15-inch speaker that I levitated with. And it started vibrating this disc. It was a 3-foot disc, and I touched the outside of the disc, and it was solid aluminum, and I kept feeling the hum. The whole room seemed to kind of hum, and I kept touching it, and pretty soon it got soft like jello, and pretty soon I put my fingers in through the aluminum hull of this craft on this little ship, and Carr just winked at me. He said, nothing. You know, he And we got into some pretty far-out conversations about what life is and everything. And he said, we're going to be doing the big craft pretty soon, and now you have to get familiar with these laws and what they are. First, you have to realize that we're living in a world of illusion, that everything is energy, including you and me and the deep blue sea. It's all energy. And we perceive of it in nanoseconds. We produce it with our retinas and create what we want to create. We're all creators, and we create our environment. And I said, well, yeah, but... And he said, no, there's no buts involved here. This is the way it is. There's a realm beyond belief. He said, the realm of belief, if you believe something, you can be convinced not to believe it. And it's called the world of duality. You get into this is black, this is white, this is red, this is... And he says it goes on and on forever in a box. It's like you're chasing your tail in a box. And you don't really get anywhere.
You were getting ready to test this vehicle. What did it look like?
Well, it was a 45-foot diameter craft, aluminum. It was a beautiful-looking ship. There was no... if you've seen one flying saucer, you've seen them all. This one looked pretty close to what you've probably seen.
Had a little the crew cab at the top or something?
Yeah, and I've got pictures that, well, in fact, Project Camelot ran a lot of the specs.
So how many people got into this craft?
Well, there were three of us, and we were seated around, almost centrally located in the center of the craft. And there was a giant steel ball, a crystal, a white, clear crystal ball, sitting in what looked to be like a gyro telescope setting. And then up through the bottom of this was a bright, I believed it to be a laser. And Carr was coaching us all the time, and he said, "Okay, now here's what we're gonna do." And he fired this up, and it was the most beautiful colors I've ever seen. It went from infrared to ultraviolet all the way around this thing in millions of degrees. I mean, you could count forever and never get to the end of the colors.
Did it make noise?
No noise.
Okay.
And he said, we're going to an area about 10 miles downrange that has a frequency that you could equate to aquamarine. So we're concentrate on aquamarine, concentrate on what you're doing, and relax. Clear your mind.
Concentrate on aquamarine, you're talking about mentally think about that.
Yeah, mentally think about the color, and keep your eye on the globe, and that's it. Just don't do anything else. Don't do anything else. Just sit there. So we did, and this globe started to pulsate, and it started to glow in aquamarine color. And
so none of the three of you were controlling anything.
No.
You were sitting here just thinking.
We were just beyond thinking. They told us don't think. They said just sit there and keep your mind clear.
Okay.
And you'll know what happens after it happens. So we did that, and what happened was... this aquamarine globe kept getting brighter and brighter, and we didn't have any sensation of movement at all. And Carr was telling us, "Okay, now get out of the ship, and I want you to go down and pick up sticks and stones, put them in your pockets, blah blah blah. Spend a little time looking around, get familiar with the territory, and then get back on board." Which we did. We got back on board, and he said, "Okay."
Did you have any sensation when you went there?
No, none.
Just instantaneously,
none.
You were there.
Instantaneously.
Okay. Carr told you were there. Or?
Well, this is it. He said, "Get back on board and sit down." Now, at that time, everything was kind of blanked out, and I didn't realize till after the experiment, I started connecting the dots of a lot of this, of what happened to me. But then he said, "Okay, now get out of the ship, come on into debriefing, and I'll tell you all about this." So we got out of the ship, and we said, "It didn't work, did it?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, you think so?" And I said, "Yeah, we didn't go anywhere, we didn't feel anything."
Okay.
And... he said, "Well, you've got witnesses here. They saw the thing levitate, and then it disappeared, and then it reappeared in about 5 seconds. I said, "Oh, well, nothing like that happened to us." And then the time that we spent, which in retrospect equated to about 15 minutes picking up sticks and stones, we'd forgotten about until he said, after we had said, "You know, we didn't go anywhere, we didn't do anything," he said, "Check your pockets." So we checked our pockets, and out comes these sticks and stones and everything else. And we were beyond, we didn't know how that happened.
Uh-huh.
We were completely out of it. And he said, your brain can only comprehend so much, and where you went was the mind. You went beyond time, you went beyond space. Time is a creation of a period that you put between the beginning and the end of something. But in real life, there is no time. It's all infinity. It goes from no beginning and no end.
The Alpha Omega.
Alpha Omega.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he explained all that to us. And he went on to say that you'll find out later in life, by continuing your research in natural law, that if you operate from the mind, not the brain, get beyond the thinking of this is right and this is wrong, this is good and this is bad, that everything is one. Everything is all good, all of it. It's only bad when you say it's bad. And it might be bad to one person, good to another. And you're going to get confused and like scrambled eggs. You're going to get all mixed up if you stay in that box. And the only way out of the box is to do what you did on board the ship. Just clear your mind and then get into the knowing of what you're doing, where you absolutely know what to do. So anyway, that's what the experiment was. That's what I've been doing ever since. We formulated a group now. We've got quite a little group going. And I guess I've been invited to quite a few places to speak about this. And my group is behind me. We've got about 12 people that are have a wide range of expertise. We've spotted some land near Prescott, Arizona, where we are feeling that we can build a big research and development laboratory and start replicating or start building spaceships again. And then presenting them this time in a different way, where I don't feel...
What's your plan on presenting them this time?
Well, we're going to build enough of them, and we're going to, via the internet, via the computer, via the wide exposure that we have now that we didn't have then, we're going to broadcast them and continually broadcast them on any media that we can, and then expose them to the public like overnight. We'll just come in droves with our craft and let people know that they've always been here. You just haven't been able to see them because your capacity has been so involved with earning a living and so forth. You haven't raised your consciousness high enough to realize what reality is.
And so the practical applications of what you're doing will be what?
Practical applications of what
building these spaceships. Are we going to replace buses, cars, and trains with them? Or?
Oh, yeah, we're going to have homes. Everybody will have their own home, complete with all self-sufficient.
So you're going back to your original dream of levitating houses.
Right.
And you'll have the pole outside with the electricity.
Right.
All of this is part of this scheme.
Right. No moving parts. No maintenance, no pollution, and no wearing out. Nothing will wear out. It'll last for as long as you want it to. And then from small homes, we want to go to cities and start levitating cities and have the same thing in the cities. And then
what's the advantage of a levitating city?
Well,
obviously the energy situation.
If I want to private location in the Ozark somewhere, and I want to sit down on over a lake and make that be my home for a while.
So you don't have to worry about ground.
You don't have to touch the ground. You can be 3 inches or 3 miles above the ground. It makes no difference wherever you want to sit. But then, if you want to get for some reason involved with something that's in the cities, then you take your little home and fly it to the big home of the mother city, or the mother ship, if you will.
So in other words, It would be every man could have his own RV.
Absolutely. Totally.
Yeah, you could just, and it wouldn't be limited to something with wheels on it. We're listening to Ralph Ring, and we're broadcasting here from the UFO Congress. We only got about 4 or 5 minutes left. How do people find you, Ralph, and people listening? And what in a perfect world would you like to have happen?
Well, years ago when I talked about these things, of course, they thought...
And how many years ago did this happen, by the way?
Well, this happened in the late 50s and early 60s.
Okay.
And, of course, in those days, to talk about the things I'm talking about now, you run the risk of them showing up with white jackets and putting in a rubber room for a while and everything.
Yeah, right.
But now people are more... they're more exposed to technology. They know things are going on that we're not exposed to. The military is far exceeded anything. They've got technology now that far exceeds anything that people realize. They have,
for instance.
Well, they have underground cities. Mount Weather, for instance, in near upper state New York. It's a complete... I have some friends that are in FEMA, and they've been there and told me it's a complete... It's a small country. They've got sidewalks. They've got schools. They've got parks. They've got artificial sunlight. They've got gardens. And yet the public is vaguely, if at all, aware that these things go on. And I've heard of several facilities like that.
Well, that took a lot of money to build. I wonder, I guess the black ops projects and budgets are even bigger than we think.
Oh, yeah, and we're paying for it all and not getting any of the benefits.
No. Who's going to go to these underground cities and why?
Well, I just talked to a gentleman the other night at dinner that is a retired Air Force pilot that has a privileged... pass that if in the event anything of major catastrophe happens, they will fly him immediately to Mount Weather, and him along with some other VIPs.
So there is a group that's already made the decisions of who gets the benefits and who gets stuck out here in the middle of whatever happens.
They're all VIPs for them on their side. Yeah. None of us.
Yeah, I don't have a pass, do you?
I don't have a pass.
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's too bad.
So
basically, you may open this up down in Prescott, and when you do, we want to get back with you and find out what's happening.
Okay.
But your first project, what do you think it'll be? Is it going to be the housing developments or the vehicles themselves or the free electricity or...
Well, there's technology out now that is available in the way of solar panels and so forth that outdate the solar panels that have been used in the past. They have developed now solar that can be put on your car or painted onto your house that will absorb electricity right out of the atmosphere, right from the sun and the atmosphere. And we want to start then on a low-key presenting alternative energies to people so that they can see that this is a real thing, and we will progress on towards our goal, which is floating homes or spaceships, if you will. And that will come down the line.
Now, one final question before we go here. You keep using the term spaceship, and literally they are. They travel in space. Mm-hmm. Will we be limited to earthbound vehicles, or can they use this for interstellar things, or do you have any idea?
Once the consciousness is raised of who and what we really are, we are living in a sea of illusion.
I want to ask you, you're a realistic guy, and so am I.
Sure.
And we're not putting anybody down, but the world's got a lot of... I'm from Oklahoma, so I can use the term.
Okay.
Rednecks, there's a lot of that mentality around how they ever going to get up to this consciousness to use this.
Oh, they'll make it. They'll make it.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah, and no other, you're optimistic. anybody probably can use these things once you develop it.
Right now, they're doing more things right now than they realize. People right now are walking through walls. They're doing everything, but they don't realize what they're doing because they don't realize who and what they are. They're a tremendous power of energy. That's what they are, is a big ball of energy.
I don't remember walking through a wall. But
well.
Yeah. But I'm not going to call you a liar because you seem to be a very intelligent human being. So
we had eight people in Prescott, Arizona, at a meeting, and I had all eight of them walk through the wall. So
you did.
Yeah, there's nothing to it. It's quite.
Well, we're going to have to make another appointment with either Carrie or we'll get our camera out and watch this.
Well,
yeah, okay, you can't do it.
Okay.
Huh?
Well,
yeah, we'll be talking to you, Ralph. I've enjoyed it.
You have to be able to know what's happening.
Okay.
And it's etheric technology.
Good luck, and I think your heart's in the right place. And Roberta Scott has been our on location producer. Our editor's been Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers. This is Jerry Pippin. Good night.